athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
I think very deeply.
In about 4 seconds, a teacher will begin to speak.
I think very deeply.
Thank you for making Box to Row a part of your week. Whether you're listening on Sirius XM channel 142 or 84, those listening to us on Nashville on Radio Free Nashville. Look, got a big show for you today here on the program. We're going to talk about the life and times of Archie Gunslinger Cooley, mostly known as the head football coach at Mississippi Valley State, especially during the mid-80s with the Satellite Express, Willie Totten and Jerry Rice. So we're going to talk about the life and times of Archie Cooley, who passed away last week at the age of 84. Joining us today here on Box to Row, Jamie Shoup, the head baseball coach at Florida A&M. The Rattlers are playing some pretty good baseball right now and is one of the leaders in the SWAC as we kind of wind the baseball season down. We've got, maybe about 3 weeks or so remaining, and you know it gets exciting. And each and every year in the SWAC, it's like whoever the regular season winner is generally does not win the SWAC tournament championship. I think that was the case last year. Florida A&M won the tournament championship. It seemed like maybe Jackson State won it. I don't have it in front of me. But in any event, Jamie Shoup, the head baseball coach of Florida A&M, going to join us on the program. Was thrilled. I forgot to mention this last week. Was thrilled to be in Tallahassee a couple of weeks ago now, to give the HBCU National Championship Trophy to the Florida A&M football team, and specifically to Coach Colsey, the new head football coach there at Florida A&M. And he talked about, you know, in his kind of his closing speech, he talked about, okay, this is, you know, we've had our run, and now it's time to turn the page. And when I say run, I mean in terms of basking in the glory of being the HBCU national champions. But we got to turn the page and move on to 2024, because 2024, I mean, it's going to be interesting in HBCU football as a whole, and in particular in the SWAC this season. I don't know if Florida A&M comes out as the preseason favorites, but certainly we'll see as spring football has ended, and we're now, what, less than 4 months away from the start of the football season. So you've got a lot going on. You've got the NBA playoffs, which are really, really solid. At least that Knicks and Philly series is a good one. We'll talk more about that. That's a Northeast rivalry, an old school rivalry, that up Northeast basketball, tough. It has been tough, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. Look, you've got the NFL draft that is still ongoing, and to no one's surprise, really, in terms of the top two picks, certainly, I think it was probably a foregone conclusion that Caleb Williams was going to be the number one pick to the Chicago Bears. And, you know, Caleb Williams, I tell this story back during the pandemic, and this was in 2021. A&T had an A&T football game was in Atlanta to play Kennesaw State game. And this is when we were kind of coming out of the pandemic. Game was over, had a chance to go back to the hotel. And, you know, I'm trying to think it was an early season game because it was a Big South game. And I can't remember. But anyway, it was an early game. Got back to the hotel room. And because, as a matter of fact, where I was staying, the Braves were playing, I can't remember, in the World Series. But that year that the Braves won the World Series, in any event, had a chance. I don't have a chance to watch a whole lot of college football. Not a whole lot, especially when you're talking about September, October, and then towards the middle part of November. So I'm watching Oklahoma. I watched Caleb Williams. It was the first time I had a chance to see him play. And I was like, man, this guy is really, really, really good. He, of course, transfers to USC, wins the Heisman Trophy, wins the Heisman Trophy eventually, and then, you know, has a really, really good career at USC. I'm going to tell you what, as a Washington Commanders fan, I love this pick of Jaden Daniels. And everything that all of the pundits have had to say has, you know, you look at, you know, Caleb Williams is ready to rock and roll. Maybe the other quarterbacks, and we'll see if they're ready right now, but Caleb Williams is ready to rock and roll. Jaden Daniels has a lot of upside, and I like what I heard when it was mentioned that Daniels could be Lamar Jackson 2.0. I'm like, that's really, really exciting to me. And, you know, having watched him play a little bit and having watched some of his highlights, like, he can really, really play. And if you're saying that he can be like a Lamar Jackson, I mean, everybody talked about Lamar Jackson, and then he, you know, the Ravens traded up. Ozzie Newsome, when he was still the GM, traded up to get him. That was an excellent move. I couldn't believe all of the people that were talking about, well, they didn't know if his game was going to translate into the National Football League. Did you watch him play at Louisville? One of the years he won the Heisman Trophy. If you watched him play, you could see that, and he's transformed, in a lot of respects, the quarterback position in the National Football League. Well, if Jaden Daniels is the next version of Lamar Jackson, then I'm all for it. That is an infusion that Washington needs. That quarterback position in D.C. is probably, from a national standpoint, going back to the days of Sammy Ball. If you want to look at the quarterback, his name is escaping me. I think it was called like the Little General Eddie. His name is escaping me. But then you look at, you know, the Sonny Jurgensen and Billy Kilmer rivalry, all the way to Joe Theismann, Jay Schrader, Doug Williams, Mark Rippon, and from there it hasn't been as great as you would like for it to be. I mean, Robert Griffin III gave us a super exciting season in 2012, and then of course that came to an end due to injury. But that quarterback position in Washington, very, very important. I think you've got a young man not only that has the skill set from a throwing perspective, also from a running perspective, just on the field, but the off the field, he seems to be a really good young man. He's going to represent DC. I think you look at I don't know if it's a turnaround immediately. I think if he can come to play immediately under a Dan Quinn defense, and he's got some weapons in Terry McLaurin, and, you know, and one of the guys that I like that I think will be utilized a little bit better, De'Ami Brown. Like, De'Ami Brown can really get down the field. He's just got to be more consistent with the running game, retooled offensive line. This is, you know, if you want to call them the Skins, you know, some people still do. If you're a Commanders fan, look, you've got really some room for optimism in Washington, D.C., led by Jaden Daniels. If he can kind of come in and, and be that guy, then we're looking at something really, really special. Of course, Drake May goes number three to New England, an interesting and an intriguing pick. I heard a lot of different things. We had Jordan Reed on a couple of weeks ago, draft analyst, and we talked with him about, you know, the some of what Drake May brings to the table. Could be a situation I hear a lot of. He may not play immediately. And you do have Jacoby Brissett, who's a capable quarterback there in New England. So we'll see what ultimately happens. You know, Marvin Harrison Jr. goes number four to the Cardinals. That's a good move. I mean, you pair him. And that I like that situation there in Arizona. You know, Malik Nabers, another big name. He goes to the New York Giants. That's an interesting move. The Giants do need receivers, but there was talk about a quarterback, and they're going to stick with Daniel Jones, and we'll see what happens there in New York. The interesting pick of the night it was Michael Penix by far. Like, Atlanta had just you've got, you know, Raheem Morris as the new coach. You just went out and got Kirk Cousins. It's like, wow, this is an infusion. And the Falcons draft Michael Penix Jr. That is a surprise. It's a future move. We get it, but it may be more future. It may be more of a situation where the future is now, not meaning 2024, but 2025, and we'll see. Penix has maybe doesn't have all of the intangibles right now, but he can throw the ball down the field, that's for sure, and sit behind Kirk Cousins, get a year under his belt. He's going to be your future. But boy, they just signed him to a 4-year, $100 million deal, meaning Kirk Cousins. So that, I thought that was, I mean, I didn't think, I mean, everybody, that's just an interesting move. And then the Vikings, who elected not to re-sign Cousins, and Cousins is, you know, he's coming off that Achilles. So I don't know if that, you know, the health plays into it as well. And then J.J. McCarthy to the Vikings, who move up to get J.J. McCarthy, the quarterback from Michigan. A lot made about J.J. McCarthy this season. So the NFL draft, it to this point has not disappointed. I was surprised that this is the first time that we've seen four quarterbacks taken in the top 10 picks. With the quarterback position, you would have just assumed that we've had more than that taken in the top 10. Later on in the program, we're going to be joined by Florida A&M head baseball coach Jamie Shoup.
More of Box to Row with Donald Ware is on the way.
Hey there, fellow travelers. It's me, the Hotel Wiz. Before you go anywhere, call me day or night for hotel rates too low to publish. I'll save you up to 75% on over 500,000 hotels across the globe. You see, I've already done the research, so you don't have to spend time online trying to find the best deal. That's up to 75% off. Just call me, the Hotel Wiz. It's a free call, and you get instant access to rates too low to publish with no cancellation fees.
Make a free call now and save up to 75% off your hotel rooms the next time you're going somewhere for business or pleasure. Call the Hotel Wiz now and get instant access to rates too low to publish. 800-811-3471. 800-811-3471. 800-811-3471. Call the Hotel Wiz right now for rates too low to publish at 800-811-3471.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to
Box
Row.
To Box to
Row.
Box to Row.
You're to come here on Box to Row, Florida A&M head baseball coach Jamie Shoup. Let's switch gears and talk some NBA. And this series between Philadelphia and New York is as compelling as it gets. And you can go back to game 2 and I happened to catch the end of the game, and I saw where the 76ers were up by five. They were up by 5 points. It wasn't that much time remaining in the, it was like inside of a minute. And I still thought the game was over at that point. Jalen Brunson hits that big three-pointer and then the steal. And even the NBA said that it was a steal, but that there should have been a foul called on that play. There was no foul called against Tyrese Maxey, and he got the ball taken from him. The Knicks ended up winning that game. And that really, you know, that transformed this series, because the Knicks did what the Knicks did in the first game. And as I talked about on last week, I thought this was a series that the 76ers would win. I'm not saying handily, but I thought the 76ers probably could get the series 4-2. The Knicks are gritty. The Knicks are playing undermanned in a lot of respects. They had a bit of an injury in Thursday's game as well. And, you know, DiVincenzo has been absolutely unbelievable. Now, we can talk about whether or not Jalen Brunson has played well. I mean, I think if you look at the numbers over the first two games in terms of his shooting, okay, that's fine. You know, he was, 8 of 24 and 8 of 27, whatever. I mean, okay, that doesn't, the numbers don't tell the story, because in game two, they won the game, and in part, and more than in part, because of that big three-pointer that he was able to knock down right before the steal. This is a Knicks team that is probably playing above itself. But it was the 76ers on Thursday that made a statement. Now, this game could have gone the wrong way for Joel Embiid, right? Coming off that loss, he's frustrated at the beginning of the game. He didn't get a foul call. There was a part in the game where he didn't get a foul call. And so on the other end, he didn't get a foul call on the offensive end. Right, turned right around to play defense. I forget who ran right into him and kind of barreled him over. He sort of fell on his own a little bit to try to sell the call. Didn't get the call. And it was Robinson. And I think it was Robinson who he ended up, like Robinson was going up for the shot, he ended up like yanking him down while Embiid was on the ground. Embiid reached up and grabbed his leg to yank him to the ground, and they called a flagrant one. He was very fortunate right there, as a matter of fact, because that's just not, you don't do that. You just don't do that. And after that, you know, and I wouldn't even call it a scuffle. You know, Embiid was yelling at a couple of the Knicks players who were yelling back. Embiid's a big dude. I don't think, and he's a star. Nobody's really going to approach him like that. But, you know, he calmed down after that. That was the thing. Like, it could have gone, you know how you may be having kind of a bad day and something happens and then the rest of your day is affected. So you're mad at everybody and everything else and nothing can go right a lot of times because you don't want it to go right because you've got this attitude. Well, that's how it seemed for Embiid in the beginning. But he was able to collect himself, get his head together, and guess what? Went for 50, a 50-piece on the Knicks in Philadelphia for game three. That third quarter, there was a barrage in the third quarter where both the Knicks and the 76ers were going back and forth. Embiid had knocked down like two or three threes in a row. You had a big shot, also a big three-pointer by Oubre. Man, Oubre has been really, really solid. Oubre is a solid player. Like, Kelly Oubre's a solid player. The guy can defend. He's got length. He's got athleticism, and he can knock down the three-pointer. That guy, he may not be an all-star. Kelly Oubre is a ball player, okay? He hit some big shots. Tyrese Maxey was big in this game. But Joel Embiid was sensational in the victory. Okay, Jalen Brunson played a lot. Well, he played well. He had 39 points and 13 assists. He shot a lot better, and I think that's interesting. He shoots better, scores almost 40 points, and the Knicks still lose that basketball game. I think the Knicks are the better team. They're the more talented team because, you know, of the guys that I've mentioned, Oubre, we know Maxey can play. Kyle Lowry, my good, Kyle Lowry has been a really, really key piece for the 76ers. You know, Hield hasn't been, I talked about Buddy Hield last week. Buddy Hield, you know, they picked him up in the trade, the 76ers did. Hield has not been as much a piece as I thought he would be. Meanwhile, you've got Lowry, who's what, in his upper 30s, but has all of this playoff experience, including winning an NBA championship. You know, he's balling, and it's just a better team. But look, I'm not counting the Knicks out. I think the 76ers do win the next game on Saturday in Philadelphia. But I think that at that point, the series starts there. Now you got to win two out of three with Philly having the home court advantage. But man, I'm telling you what, this series has been absolutely unbelievable. I give the Knicks all the credit in the world because to me, the 76ers are a better team. Now we got to look at the health of Embiid. And, you know, he had what they determined was a case of something where it sort of affects your face and Bell's palsy. That's what it is. Bell's palsy. And so, you'll have to monitor that. You've got to, you know, monitor that knee. He was still kind of limping a little bit, but it's like, he's gutting it out. Like the knee is not, it wasn't like, okay, remember when Jimmy Butler got hurt in that last, the play-in game, and he ended up going down and then kind of gutted through it, and then it was an MCL and now he's out. It's not that same kind of injury with Embiid. It just bothers, but when the lights are brightest, man, that guy is coming to play. And so give, as much as I'm going to give the Knicks credit, because the Knicks are kind of gutting it out. They're undermanned in some respects. You know, Jalen Brunson has been absolutely unbelievable and rightfully so an MVP candidate. But look, give, especially in game three, that is a game that the 76ers had to have with a crowd, by the way. There were a lot of Knicks fans there, of course. The two cities, I mean, what, separated by maybe, what, an hour and a half, maybe, something like that. Boy, that is a really, really, really good series. Unlike the Timberwolves and the Suns. Like, I don't understand. Like, if you're the Suns and you've got three bona fide players, you know, you're getting manhandled at this point by the Timberwolves, who are young and good. I'm not taking anything away from the Timberwolves. It's a young, good basketball team. That said, you know, the Suns are, it's really embarrassing. If you're a Phoenix Suns fan, you've got to be embarrassed right now in the way in which the Timberwolves are playing. But we'll see what happens in game four, and if the Suns can sort of fight back and get one, if you will. Thunder and Pelicans pretty much going like we thought it would go. I mean, look, hey, you know, the Thunder are really, really good. It's a good basketball team. The Pelicans obviously are undermanned, and so the Thunder are definitely doing their thing. Celtics and Heat, I was very surprised, very, very surprised that the Heat was able to get that victory over the Celtics to tie it at 1-1. But look, we knew this about the Celtics. All season long, it's been feast or famine in a lot of respects for Boston. Either they'll beat teams, you know, they'll beat a team, or they'll have 30-point leads against lesser teams and inexplicably lose those ball games. Now, I'm not going to look. The Heat is a well-coached team. Eric Spoelstra is an excellent coach. They've got some really, really good players. You know, Adebayo, you've got Hero that really stepped up. You've got others, Martin. I mean, they've got really, really good players, and they're battle-tested. It's a playoff. It's a team that's been in the playoffs every year. It's a finals-contending team. I got it. But if you're the Celtics and you've been the best team throughout the course of the season overall, now, certainly there have been some mini lows for the Celtics this year, and it's just one game. You know, it's just one game. But the problem is, now you've got to win one of the next two as we go to Miami, right? So, look, the Celtics have put themselves in a bit of a situation, I think, for the Celtics to kind of regain their footing. They've got to win game three. And I think if the Celtics do that, I mean, I'm not going to say they're going to be on good footing, but they'll feel better about it. They lose game three. Now it's a must win in terms of game four in Miami. So that particular series is interesting. I think the Lakers and Nuggets series, I mean, the Lakers may get swept in game four. Look, the Lakers gave it all they had in game two, had an opportunity, and the Nuggets just walked the Lakers down, just bided their time, much like they did in game three. By the way, the Lakers have had a double-digit lead in every game in the series. Jamie Shoup, the head baseball coach at Florida A&M, is up next.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
I'm excited I get to play for them. They support us in everything we do. You know, it's a joy to, you know, go to work and know that you're going to be, they're going to cheer for you as loud as they can, no matter who you're playing.
Michael B. Jordan.
And I think it's a testament to, you know, what HBCUs mean to people, you know, and having that community and culture and shining a light on the universities, you know what I'm saying, in a real way, and creating a pipeline from these kids in high school and making them feel good about wanting to land at HBCU. We have high talent. And often it's gone and shipped out to other places. It's never poured back into the community. So if we can create an environment that's cool and a beacon of light and people want to feel like they want to be here. And so putting it on the national stage is really big. You know, most of the time these kids don't get televised games. You know what I'm saying? So be able to put them on Turner in a real way was really, really important. And then the brands and then the sponsors, you know what I'm saying? And getting, you know, the NBA, you know, scouts and looks to come in and hopefully like build this thing bigger.
The one and only Stephen A. Smith.
It's my sincere hope that when my ride ends, I'll get a big hug and a big thank you for what I tried to do for other people when I was at the top. Because that's all you have to lean on at the end of the day, bro. I mean, I plan on being successful for years to come, but it ain't gonna last forever. And, you know, when my day comes, when it's the end of the road and it's time for somebody else to be in my seat, in my chair, you know, it's my hope that whoever that person or those people are, people that knew I cared about them and believed in them to help them get to this place.
Hey, Spike Lee.
Thank you. I haven't heard that. I mean, I've been on radios all over the nation. Thank you for that question. I'm a third-generation Morehouse man. I was taught to speak your truth, and that there's very special about being a Morehouse man, the same way you feel about your school, the same way we feel all about our respective historic black colleges. That would have been my first choice anyway, and I'm proud to be a Morehouse man.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused, just really, you know, excited.
That is the voice of Steph Curry.
Your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson. It's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
The one and only Michael Strahan.
Always good to talk to you. Hopefully next time it won't be, 14 years. You get to Man, you know what is good, and you're encouraging people to be better and do better, and that's what I love, man. So thank you. I appreciate you.
As we're joined by the one and only Jerry Rice, what do you remember most about those days at Mississippi Valley State?
What is going on at Mississippi Valley State University? Why are these guys putting up unbelievable numbers? And that brought awareness to the school, and after that, I got drafted to the San Francisco 49ers.
Dave Roberts, manager of the L.A. Dodgers, to be per person of color and be the manager of the Dodgers. What does that mean to you?
I think the first thing that comes to me is responsibility. With recency and kind of the social, the racial issues that we're having that have really come to light, which is, I believe, are good things. I think that it's a responsibility for me to be the first manager of color for the Dodgers. There's not many of us in baseball to do things the right way, to hopefully give other people of color opportunity. Hopefully it just paves the way. So I think that for me, I definitely look at it as responsibility, but something I'm willing to undertake.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
Oh, man, thank you for having me, play in a real way. I mean, I'm so honored. You know, Football League has done so many wonders. We got over 200 kids that have graduated from high school. We have over 50 kids that have going to Division I.
NBA All-Star Chris Paul.
That was great to bring it back to Winston-Salem State University, a black college. Something that my city had never seen before, may never see again, and just having a up-close and personal feeling with LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Melo. It was exciting. I'm grateful for those guys coming out.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K. What was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a big package for you to become a better player, but for me it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car, and I was driving it in the first 8 games. And, you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey, man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite three topics.
Hey, y'all. It is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's From the Press Box to Press Row, real, relevant radio. We're going to continue here on Box to Row. We're joined by a gentleman, as a matter of fact, in his 11th season as the head baseball coach at Florida A&M. The Rattlers are 20-20 on the season, getting ready for a weekend series against Jackson State. Also might add 15-3-3 in the SWAC. Jamie Shoup, once again, joining us here on Box to Row. Coach Shoup, what's going on? Welcome back to the program.
I appreciate it. It sounds better. The 15-3 sounds a whole lot better than the 20-20. So let's go with conference record right now. So
we can.
We're just started last weekend, the second time through the Eastern Division of SWAC play. So we've got four big series left in SWAC play. Starts, as you said, this weekend at Jackson State, a very good baseball team.
No doubt. You've had some tough opponents, you know, throughout the course of this season. But, you know, really, I've got to start here. I remember, okay, you won the MEAC in 15-19. I think Right. We may have even had you on your first season as the head coach in 14. Does it seem like it's been 11 seasons?
You know, it doesn't. It's been an enjoyable time here for me. You know, before that, I worked so many years over across the road at Florida State University. And the environment's different here. It's a little more relaxed. We're able to, you know, over there it was win, win, win. You know, it's a nationally ranked program, and the pressure to win was intense. Here there's pressure, but it's pressure you put on yourself. It's, you know, it doesn't come from college baseball. When we took over this program, the program was very, very down, and we're able to bring some better players in and do things a different way and you know, get the program built up a little bit. I've enjoyed my time here. It's been a wonderful 10 seasons. You count COVID, 11 years here. And I still think the best is yet to come. I think we continue to get better. We were able to win the SWAC championship last year. I thought we represented the SWAC and HBCU baseball very well in postseason play. You know, we lost to the number 2 team and the number 10 team in the country last year in the regional play, both by 3 runs. So we were both win both ball games, had a chance to win both ball games. And you know, we lost the first game 3-0 to Florida, who was the eventual runners-up in college baseball, lost to LSU in the College World Series. So enjoying my time. It's been wonderful. I'm going to try to go for 3 or 4 more years and then shut it down. But, you know, this year, hopefully, I think we have another chance to compete. We played well through the first half of SWAC play. Now one series into the second half of SWAC play. We still got Jackson State, Bethune-Cookman, Alabama State, you know, 3 perennial names in college baseball when it comes to HBU and SWAC baseball left to play, as well as Mississippi Valley. So starts this weekend at Jackson State. Omar Johnson does a great job with that program, and we're not playing well right now, so you know, that's our main concern. Since I've been here, our focus has always been on us, not on the who we play. Because if we play well enough, you know, play the game well enough, then you got a chance to win the game, no matter who you play. So I'm just trying to get us turned around and playing better than we've played of late. And hopefully we'll be able to do that this weekend.
Yeah, it's a good point. And by the way, having taken the first series against Jackson State, you took all three games. That said, I want to piggyback off when you mentioned not playing well. Okay, but you took 2 of 3. From Alabama A&M, the last game being a loss, and then you played Auburn. I mean, that's not – I got it, but that's not easy, Coach Hoop.
No, well, you know, we've done that since I've been here. Last season, it's the reason we never have a winning overall record. We always have a winning record in SWAC play or MEAC play back when we were in the MEAC. But our out-of-conference record is not very good. The reason for that is last season, people don't even realize, last season we played the third toughest out-of-conference schedule in college baseball, reported by D1 Baseball. And this year it's just as tough. We played 25 non-conference games, or will have by the time we finish these next two midweek games, 25 non-conference games, and I think 15 or 16 of those games that we played were against teams that were either in the regional tournament or the NCAA super regional tournament, including Florida, as I mentioned, as you know, the end up being the national championship runner up. So we don't hide from anybody. We play Florida, we play Auburn, we play Troy, you know, who was a regional team, one ground ball away from going to a super regional. We played Indiana State this year, super regional team from last year. So we play a very tough schedule. I think it helps us. A lot of times as a coach, I tend to get down on my guys because I don't like the results. But I have liked the results in SWAC play, in conference play. So, you know, there's a good and a bad. The bad is that we don't always, you know, our record doesn't always look that good, that impressive when it comes to overall record. But the good being, you know, we're not going to see any pitchers that are better than what we saw when we go to face Auburn, you know, when we go to face Florida or Indiana State or those clubs. So we'll be well prepared, and there won't be any surprises in SWAC play. Something that's going to surprise us, arm that's going to be better than what we've seen during the course of the year. So it prepares us well. It has been our formula. I think we'll continue to do that. It gives our players an opportunity to go to venues like Auburn. I mean, Auburn tried to get out there. It was 95-98 against it. You know, we played Florida last season in the regional tournament, and their guy first three pitches were 99, 101, and 100. So that's, you know, says a lot about how we do things, and it tells why our record is. I think it tells both stories. That's why our record is not good overall and why our record is good in SWAC play and conference play.
You know, I think it, and I got it. In Florida, you mentioned Florida State's a national program, and you never know what could happen, especially that you had been there. I think maybe during your tenure, you may have even beaten Florida State. But I got to ask, Florida State, you mentioned Florida, you mentioned Auburn. Florida State's literally, well, not literally, but all basically right across the street from FAMU. You don't play Florida State this year.
Florida State has never played FAMU. I think one time, even when I was an assistant coach there for the 21 years, I think we only played them one time, and I don't remember the special circumstances that, you know, that had that occurring. But when I came over, leaving Florida State, it didn't really end real well at Florida State. There was a little animosity there, and we weren't going to play them. If we're lucky enough to win the SWAC this year, and it's going to take some luck because SWAC baseball is very, very good. All you got to do is look at Southern beating LSU this year, Bethune-Cookman beating Miami this year, Alabama State beating the Auburn team that pounded us. So we've got, you know, at least three games wins against Power 5 programs. So SWAC baseball is very, very good. So you got to be good, and you also got to be lucky to win the conference tournament. If we're lucky enough to do that, I feel like this year will be the year the NCAA will send us across the road to Florida State. We'll work hard to get there wherever we get a chance to go.
Jamie Shoup, again in his 11th season as the head baseball coach of Florida A&M. He joins us here on Box to Row. Florida A&M ranked number 3 in the BlackCollegeBaseball.com poll. Let's talk personnel. I mean, Ty Jackson is tearing it up for you. He may lead, or at least one of the leaders, in terms of slugging percentage. But then, you know, you've got another young man, Sebastian Greco, who has 9 home runs on the season. You guys seem to have a little bit of offense going.
Yeah, we swing the bat good, especially of late. Yesterday we didn't swing it particularly well. it starts with Ty Jackson. Ty Jackson is he's the best player in terms of not only skill and what he brings to the baseball field, but just attitude. You know, I tell my guys all the time, the key to life is attitude. And, you know, if your attitude's good in life, it's going to be good in this crazy game of baseball. He is without a doubt, from my 21 years at Florida State, my 10 or 11 years here, the best player that has that. He understands the attitude aspect of not only baseball, but of life. So he's our leadoff guy. You know, if he goes, we go, that kind of guy. Just never has a bad day. Infectious personality. Everybody wants to hang around Ty Jackson, whether you're on our team or another team. He's just one of those special human beings. So we're going to miss him. He's a senior this year. Hopefully he'll get a chance to play professional baseball. But, you know, he's at the top of our lineup. He's played center field for us, and it all starts and, you know, ends with him. If he goes, we go. He is that engine that kind of fuels us. You mentioned Graco, our first baseman. He hit 17 home runs last year, which was a school record. You know, this year he's got 9 currently. We need him to get hot. We got a guy named Jan Michael Bastardo, who plays right field for us. It hits third, hits right in front of Graco. And he, to me, is a tremendous hitter as well. He's got 3 or 4 home runs and probably leads us, or close to leading us, you know, close to Ty in terms of batting average and all. He's a senior. Ty's a senior. We got Adam Hatemoda, who plays third base, who hits behind Graco and protects him a little bit, who's having a big year offensively too. So we got some guys that can swing it a little bit. You know, pitching had been good up until this last weekend, and we faltered a little bit on the hill. We got to get those guys confident, get those guys back. And, you know, as I said, I like our chances. We got a chance. Everybody has a chance. It's in the swag because it's such a good top-to-bottom league. 8 of the 12 teams will make the conference tournament, and it'll be competitive. So excited for this time of the year. Really excited with what's coming up, because when we finish final exams next week, these kids will be able to focus on baseball only. And it's just a fun time to be. I'm sure I can remember it from, believe it or not, many, many, many years ago. But I can remember getting those finals under your belt, having about 3 or 4 weeks of baseball only left. And it's just a fun time to be that age and play in college baseball.
Couple more thoughts with Jamie Shoup, the head baseball coach at Florida A&M. What is it? Speak about Jackson State. Again, you swept them in the first time around just a couple of weeks ago. You know, what are some of the challenges that the Tigers present?
Oh, they're good. I mean, as I said, everybody in SWAT plays good. Jackson State, Omar has always done a good job. I don't like Omar, and it has nothing to do with personal feelings. It has everything to do with how he coaches his team and how he always has them ready. This year is the first year we've ever swept Jackson State in a 3-game series. So I'm sure he will have his team ready to play to try to return that favor when we go to his place this weekend. You tend to not like a guy when you can't beat him, and Omar's been that guy for me since I've been at FAMU. So respect what he does immensely. Look forward to competing at him. It just drives me crazy that he always seems to get the better hand. So hopefully we'll be able to at least win 1 or 2 there and, you know, keep building this thing toward the postseason. We only have them. Then we got Bethune-Cookman, who's really, really good, especially on the hill, coming in the next weekend. And then Alabama State, we go to their place the next weekend. So we got the gauntlet of those 3 major SWAC, major HBCU programs in front of us for the next 3 weekends.
Last thought, Coach Shoup, we appreciate that because we want to respect your time in having practice. What does it mean? I got to figure that there are very few coaches in college baseball to lead a team to tournament championships in 2 different conferences. You have, in fact, done that with your tournament victory last year in the SWAC. What does that mean to you?
It just means we get good kids that we, you know, we treat them right, and we hope that we can get the best out of them. You know, our job as coaches is not only to prepare these guys to try to win a baseball game or two, but to prepare them for life. So the one thing I do, I mean, I call it my pillow theory at night. If I can put my head on my pillow and feel good about what I've said to these young men, because they're at a very influential age. Education has to be pushed on these guys to be the most important thing in their life. You know, I tell them all the time, you can come to college and you can play for 3-4 years and work the rest of your life, or you can work academically as hard as you can for 4 years and have the money and the ability to play the rest of your life. So it's been a blessing to be able to work with these guys. We've been fortunate to win 2 titles in 2 different conferences. but that's because of the young men that we recruit, the young men that come in and they, you know, dedicate themselves to first and foremost doing what they're supposed to do in the classroom, being model citizens. You know, I'll put my guys up against anybody in terms of the young men that they become.
Jamie Shoup, in his 11th season as the head baseball coach at Florida A&M, joining us here on the program. The Rattlers are ranked number 3 in the BlackCollegeBaseball.com poll, a weekend series on the road at Jackson State. Coach Shoup, we always appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Rattlers.
We appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. Appreciate what y'all do for HBCU baseball and college baseball.
Appreciate it, Coach Shoup. Up next here on Box to Row, we're going to talk about the life of times and reflect on Archie Gunslinger.
Find the Box to Row YouTube page for conversations with stars like Omari Hardwick, Brandy, Michael Strahan, and with some of our favorite sports guests over the years. Box to Row. Box to Row. Box to Row.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
This young lady is a member. The first time ever an HBCUer has been a national champion. Morgan Price of Fisk. I mean, what did it mean to be the first HBCUer ever to win a collegiate national championship in gymnastics?
It means everything to me. It really, like, shows why I decided to come to an HBCU. I really wanted to just inspire the younger generation so that they know they can go to an HBCU as well and win competitions no matter how big or small your school
is. From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
It's Donald Ware, From the Press Box to Press Row.
As you may have heard, Archie the Gunslinger Cooley, who coached Mississippi Valley State, coached also at Arkansas Pine Bluff, also coached at Norfolk State, and at Paul Quinn, passed away on last week at the age of 84. And what a legacy when you talk about Archie Gunslinger Cooley. You're talking about the Satellite Express. And of course, that made up of Willie Totten and Jerry Rice. Of course, Jerry Rice went on to set records in the National Football League and to become one of the National Football League's greatest players of all time. And if you look at the totality of his career, because even if you look at certainly his time at Valley, which was a great time, by the way, at Mississippi Valley State. Mississippi Valley State hasn't had success since, or that kind of success since. Now, Willie Totten was able to do a couple of things and some coaches here and there, but it's been a struggle. Even Willie Totten, with his name and being an alum of the university, couldn't even get the university to where it could be, okay, or even the days of Archie Cooley. Okay. When I think back, and again, I was alive. I was born. I was around at that time when you're talking about the mid 80s. But I always used to really talk with Roscoe Nance. Rest in peace to Roscoe Nance, the great NBA writer for USA Today. But before he started writing for USA Today and covering the NBA, he was covering HBCUs. And he used to tell all kinds of stories. And think about this. When you talk about the greatness or think about the greatness of the SWAC and all of the years that the SWAC has been around and all of the great programs associated with the SWAC, I don't know. I don't know if there was a better era in SWAC than in the mid 80s. As a matter of fact, I don't think there was. And we can go back to, you know, all of the great players that came through during the 60s and the 70s when Prairie View A&M during the 60s was in 50s and 60s was really, really good and all of that. And since then, you've had some pretty good programs in the SWAC. But that 80s era, and in particular, the mid 80s era, was unbelievable, because not only did you have the Satellite Express and Archie Cooley at Mississippi Valley State, okay, you also had Eddie Robinson at Grambling, okay, you also had Marino Kasem at Alcorn State, okay, you also had W.C. Gordon at Jackson State. It was a phenomenal era in SWAC football. Now, you could certainly go and look at the at a decade later at, you know, Alcorn State and Steve McNair coming through, maybe kind of rivaling that, because as good as the Satellite Express were, which they were very good, I mean, Steve McNair was doing some things that were unbelievable. And remember, he was in the Heisman Trophy running a la Doug Williams. And by the way, it even spans the era of Doug Williams. Look, Doug Williams was great. I mean, when you talk about the mid-70s, I mean, he was great. But I'm talking about an era in which you had all of those great coaches at the respective schools. And check this out. In 84, when Mississippi Valley State went to the playoffs, Valley didn't even win the SWAC. It was Alcorn State that won the SWAC. As a matter of fact, Alcorn State was undefeated. And when Alcorn State and Jackson State met, Jackson State came away with the 49-32 victory in front of 50,000 people, or in excess of 50,000 people in Jackson. So look, I got it. You know, Doug Williams on the front end of that era of the mid-80s era of SWAC football, and on the back end, meaning 10 years after the mid-80s, you're talking about Steve McNair. But in that mid-80s, you were talking about SWAC football. Yes, you were talking about Jackson State as one of the schools. You were talking about Grambling as one of the schools. But the most exciting school and the most exciting offense, the most prolific of offenses, out even outside of the SWAC in the nation, belonged to Mississippi Valley State and Archie the Gunslinger Cooley. Check out some of these numbers, right? That 84 year, okay? That year, Jerry Rice caught like 112 passes for close to 2,000 yards and like 32 touchdowns, okay? Willie Totten passed for like, I think it was like 58 touchdowns or something like that. Like, that's absolutely unbelievable. And as I mentioned, you look at Jerry Rice, he went on to have a lot of success in the National Football League. And Willie Totten, you know, he had a shot during that strike year when they were called the Scabs, the NFL players that replaced the players that replaced the players that were striking were called Scabs. A lot of them played for three games there in 1987. So he had some success in the Arena League and in the Canadian Football League as well. And then he went on to become a coach and had some success as a head coach at Mississippi Valley State, but even had some other success as an offensive coordinator, as a quarterback's coach in terms of developing quarterbacks. I mean, look, let's even look at a year like 1985. I talk about the greatness of the SWAC. Well, you know, Grambling was 9-3 overall, 6-1 in SWAC play. Jackson State was 8-3, 6-1 in SWAC play. Mississippi Valley State was 8-3 and 5-2 in SWAC play, didn't make the playoffs and did not win the SWAC championship. Let's go look at the 83 season. Okay, again, Grambling, dominant, 8-1-2, couple of ties. And obviously, we don't have ties now in college football, and was undefeated in SWAC play. Jackson State had two losses at 5-2, was 8-3, where and then Southern was 7-4 overall, but was 5-2 in conference play, and then Valley was 7-2, and 1 overall, but 4-2 in SWAC play. And these teams were nationally ranked. I look at the national rankings. I would imagine some of these rankings would be what the teams were ranked at the end of the season. Grambling at number 10, Jackson State at number 15, and Mississippi Valley State at number 19. This was a great time in HBCU football, but specifically in the SWAC. Big crowds, high-powered offense, and those the main attraction in terms of the offenses in the SWAC were led by Archie Gunslinger Cooley. What a phenomenal career. Now, I mean, when I think about, okay, you think about, of course, Jerry Rice and Willie Totten are both in the College Football Hall of Fame, and rightfully so, with what they were able to do as the Satellite Express. You know, Jerry Rice went on to be one of the greatest players to ever play in the National Football League. And I get it. I mean, if I look at the overall record, 42-27-2, and Mississippi Valley State was his first head coaching job, and it was hard to win. I mean, even in the beginning, you look at his first record the first year, 1980, 5-5. The second year, 4-6-1. The third year, 1982, was 5-5. Then it started to take off in 83. He had Jerry Rice, he had Willie Totten, and then they had some really, really good years up until 85 when Mississippi Valley State went 8-3. And then in 86 went 4-4-1. And then it was time for Archie the Gunslinger Cooley to move on, and he went on to Arkansas Pine Bluff, had some success. And as Arkansas Pine Bluff was making the transition from NAIA to F, as we called it that at that time, 1AA, and then to ultimately to the SWAC. So, I mean, if I look at the numbers, his overall record, and he didn't have much success at Paul Quinn either, was trying to start up a program. Paul Quinn had some financial difficulties, and he ended up going like 11-31 in like seven seasons at Paul Quinn. But his overall record, 83-78-5, so probably not enough in terms of being in the College Football Hall of Fame. That said, there should be some kind of college, I think some kind, he's of course a SWAC Hall of Famer. There should be some kind, because he played it, and he also played, from my understanding, a pretty solid player, two-way player, when he played at Jackson State, and he played under Big John Merritt, who coached at Jackson State, but was mainly known for what he was able to accomplish as the head coach at Tennessee State. There should be some kind of, like, maybe you're not in the Hall of Fame, but you're part of the Hall of Fame. Sort of like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right? Like, we just had some inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, Mary J. Blige and A Tribe Called Quest and Kool and the Gang and others, right? And, you know, just stepping outside of sports for a minute, if I look at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right? Like, I look at, okay, we had, what, seven inductees, but also part of that class was Dionne Warwick. Now, Dionne Warwick, to me, and again, getting away from what we're talking about, but I'm going to bring it back home. Dionne Warwick, to me, should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame before there was Aretha Franklin and Gladys Knight and everybody. There was Dionne Warwick, who had all of these number one hits, by the way. Now, maybe some of the other things kind of got in the way and people viewed her differently in terms of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think she definitely should be in. But with this class, she wasn't part of the class, but she was, well, she's part of the class, but not like as a performer. So that's what I'm saying with Archie Cooley. It should be, maybe he's not truly a Hall of Famer, maybe, but he should be part of the College Football Hall of Fame. My time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Jamie Shoup for joining us today here on Box to Row. For more information on the program, log on to our website, boxtorow.com. And always remember to support those that support Yo! Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.